Hi, everyone. What you're about to listen to is an interview that I took in person while attending the Crypto Commons Gathering Conference in Austria in August 2021. The conference itself was a wonderful experience where people of a lot of different backgrounds and political ideas were able to discuss openly and safely about how crypto can intersect with fostering the commons. What you'll notice from these interviews is that these differences in thought are sometimes apparent because we all come from different places. And what was honestly refreshing about the experience is that we could do it in a supportive environment. This was probably one of the most receptive audiences in crypto to socialism, which was really great for me. Also, a heads up is that you may notice sometimes that the audio was clearly recorded in the house that we were all staying in, which wasn't the best place for recording, but we did the best that we could with what we had. A lot of the interviews will also likely feature in the documentary that I'm making about the world of crypto and its potential futures with a friend. A big reason I was able to make it to this conference was thanks to all the support I received from patrons, so if you find the work that I do important, I hope you'll consider helping out starting at $3 per month on patreon.com/theblockchainsocialist. So I'm here with Sarah Mansky, who last time we spoke a lot about the paper that you had published around that time, I think with people like Michelle Bowens and others on thinking about having like a framework for thinking about cryptocurrencies within a type of like more common setting. And now here we are in real life, sort of trying to do that face-to-face, I guess, a bit.
Right.
But maybe to start very quickly, in case people don't know, could you just give an introduction to yourself?
Sure. Okay, so I'm Sarah Mansky. I'm a professor in the business school at George Mason University and also in the Department of Global Affairs. So I teach both about, you know, globalization and also about business. And my perspective is we need to grow the commons and the cooperative movement and move towards an economy that's beyond extraction, towards cooperation. And so I'm here at the conference to be a part of the movement that is trying to do that. And it's mostly technologists at this conference, and they have their own unique strategies and tools to accomplish that end.
So I guess you have spoken a lot to different types of technologists as part of your research and as a part of your work. Maybe if you could give us like a compare and contrast, maybe it might be interesting, of some of the technologists that you have worked with before and how that differs from maybe technologists who are involved in the crypto commons that we would vaguely call a like loosely associated group here in this house.
Sure. Well, you know, like all groups of people, you get, you know, people from who are just about making money and producing a product that will make as much money for them and their investors as possible, and people who are trying to do good but are doing it in a way where it kind of just doesn't really challenge the existing system. You know, a lot of assumptions are left in place about how we treat the environment, how we treat workers, power relations, you know, wealth inequality. And then the people here who are trying to, you know, examine and challenge all of the assumptions that we currently live under that produce systems of that are extractive and destroy the planet and also extract wealth from employees and don't provide people with all the things they need to be happy and, you know, live a healthy life.
Yeah. So you say just in what you, well, I guess I'm curious what you think about the conference so far. Maybe that's
okay.
Like, do you think, okay, so what are your general thoughts about it?
About the conference?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're here in the mountains of Austria, and that's great. It's been rainy and cold. There's no heat in the house. Which...
In August?
Right, and we are all walking around with 3 or 4 layers on to stay warm, right? But I mean, the conference is great. I've never been to a conference like this. I've been to a lot of activist gatherings, so it still has that kind of feeling of being in a co-op and hanging out with friends. It's been very useful for me because I am somebody who really tries to pay attention to all these projects, and there are projects I didn't know existed that I'm hearing about for the first time and realizing, oh, that was the missing link that needed to happen to make this happen. And that's what people are doing. They're taking and identifying all the tools we need that are missing currently, and they're just building them because they're technologists, so they can do that. So they have this, you know, socio-technical imaginary where they're imagining the future world they want to live in and building that world directly with the tools they have at their disposal. And so that's very exciting because often you're at activist gatherings and people are talking about all the problems we face and how we're going to never really win. But the spirit here is one of optimism and excitement because they're just building the solutions they need and they don't have to wait for anyone to give them permission or go appeal to a higher authority because it's just them and their skills and they're brilliant. I mean, in this house right now are some of the most brilliant minds in the world, which is always fun and exciting.
I'm flattered if I'm included.
You're included, definitely. Definitely.
So, I want to talk, because you talked earlier in the conference, so I wanted to dig a little bit deeper on some of those concepts that you talked about. Mm-hmm. So the first one I want to talk about is sovereignty, because sovereignty is something that is used a lot in crypto-related discourse.
Yes.
There's a lot of mention of sovereignty, and I imagine that there's also a lot of misunderstanding of sovereignty and sort of whether knowing it or not, sort of obfuscating who's actually sovereign in different types of systems.
Right.
So I was wondering if you could speak about
sovereignty. Sure, yeah. No, I wrote that piece on sovereignty because I kept hearing self-sovereign identity and value sovereignty and the word sovereignty all the time in this space. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write about sovereignty. But the way, I mean, politicians will talk about sovereignty, technologists will talk about it, lawyers will talk about it. But when I talk about sovereignty, I define it as who has the legitimacy in a particular bounded space to make the rules. And so as we move through the day, we move through various sovereign spaces. You're in the city, you're under their governance, and you're in that country and you're under that governance. And usually, in the US, it's a democracy, right? So the people are supposed to be sovereign. But then you go into a workplace and your sovereignty is kind of disappears in most workplaces because you're under a corporate layer of sovereignty and you have to follow those rules, which are very different, right? The employees don't usually rule in the workplace. They don't make the decisions. So our sovereignty as individuals is often restricted extremely. And then you go into digital spaces where we spend most of our time, and universally digital spaces are authoritarian and undemocratic, right? You are given a terms of service that you have to agree to and you can't change. And if you don't agree to them, then you don't get to use the digital world. And most of these terms of service are, we own everything you create and we can make money off of it, right? So, we in the blockchain space want to challenge that. So I think that's why people are always talking about sovereignty, because they like the fact that in these decentralized systems, people own their own data and nobody owns the content and it's fully distributed among the users. And so that gives the power back to the people. And that's what's really exciting. And so they're building all kinds of tools right now to replace the digital tools we currently use. So a new self-sovereign version of Facebook, right? A new self-sovereign version of the internet server system, a new sovereign version of nonprofit giving. Every service you use right now, then they're making it a sovereign version of that.
It sounds like what you're describing is also like the essence of what also people call like the transition from web 2 to web 3 a bit. Like,
yes.
That's one lens is through
yes.
sovereignty.
Yes.
Where right now as users, you're just sort of agreeing to enter into these like walled gardens where you sort of, yeah, they're going to make money off of your data, and that has various consequences that we've already seen.
Right. Yeah. In academia, we call that heteromation, where the users do this labor that is completely uncompensated. Now, in the Silicon Valley world, they'll say, actually, that's called freemium. You are getting something. You're getting this great service, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's two sides to that, but definitely the value being created by all the users is much greater than the service you're usually being provided.
Yeah. Do you think that a lot of times that crypto projects are, that they're using the word correctly, or have you seen any instances when sovereignty is sort of like misused?
Yes. Sovereignty refers to a a situation. So you can't really have value sovereignty, because value doesn't create sovereignty, right? So it's like a strange pairing. I know what they're trying to say. They're trying to say that we're going to give value back to the people, kind of thing. But it's just a weird way to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the way I've sort of tried to understand sovereignty is that, like, it's almost like you have the ability to also destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever you have. It's like, if I have sovereignty, I guess, a bit. I don't know, if you take, like, the financial system, I can't, like, burn my, you know, Wells Fargo bank accounts or something like that.
Right.
But if I have it in cash, I can throw it into a fire and then it's gone. Is that sovereignty? Is that incorrect?
I would say no, because in the situation you're describing, you're talking about that, that you yourself have sovereignty, but you're talking about like the ability to enter and exit into relationships and contracts, right? Mm-hmm. So you do in a democracy, you have the ability to make the rules about how you handle your own wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have political sovereignty. I think what you're talking about, maybe you could call it like financial sovereignty, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's like, it's not the probably the most clear way to describe what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the other concepts that you mentioned that was really interesting during one of your talks was about a race between systems.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this race, and who is competing in this race?
Sure. So in any new, let me start again. I would say that we are in a situation like Gramsci called the interregnum, which is when one system is, the technologies of that system are not, they're too brittle to respond to the needs of the system. And you start to see breakdowns happening. Political breakdowns, like with the election of Trump. Financial breakdowns with the banks and the housing crisis. Healthcare breakdowns with COVID and people not being able to get the treatment they need. And so as the system starts to break and be unresponsive to the needs that the people have, you can get all kinds of weird things that go on. And so we're in this race because if we don't, the whole thing could break, basically, if we don't build new systems. And the people at this conference definitely feel that. And I've been told many times by different technologists that they are building an ark. Like, they're just trying to build the bicycle while they ride it, kind of metaphors, racing as fast as they can to build the things that people need before we have social collapse. And so I'm appreciative that they're doing that, right? Because I don't see people in Washington, D.C. Like when I talked to a senator the other day and I was talking to him and he's like really unaware that there's serious changes that need to happen. They think that they can make small changes, you know, on the sides and that will be okay. Like we can have just new policies and people will be all right, right? Obviously major global problems like climate change are not going to,
like a tax hike isn't going to fix it.
That's not going to fix it, right? Or carbon, you know, some little carbon credits here or there. And also with technologies, there's pathway dependencies. So if you build something like a computing system, you have to make all these hundreds of design choices to get it to work. And then as the material structure of the technology changes, those design choices usually are carried along with it. So the way computers are designed right now, I hear technologists tell me that they don't like it because it was originally designed because you actually had like actual tape in the machine. And that's why certain data structures are laid out the way they are. And it's still like that, even though you don't need to do it anymore. And so if we create pathway dependencies with this technology that reinforce capitalism and extraction and gender inequality and all of that, they might stay with us for a really long time. And so we have to figure, like the internet, for instance, is one example of, you know, you take a technology, you drop it in a capitalist system, and what is it used for? You know, it's used for like
for capitalism
to make a bunch of money for a few people, right? So they're trying to figure out how to race forward faster than the capitalists, who are going to take this technology and use it for their own benefit, of course, right? So,
yeah. So, would you just generally describe the race as between like entrenched capitalist class and some sort of like post-capitalist alternative trying to be made, I guess, form of technologies?
Yes, I mean,
there could be smaller divisions, I'm sure.
No, there's a transnational capitalist class. Yeah. There's also a transnational cooperative, you know, commoner class, right? That are here mainly, you know, that sometimes they're called digital nomads, but, so capitalists are already, they're way ahead, you know, because they're better financed. Although the types of things this technology is uniquely designed to not be very good for capitalists. It was designed to get around Wall Street and states, right? So capitalists benefit when they can enclose something and it restrict access to it, create scarcity, right? This technology is kind of like, does the exact opposite. So they have to figure out how to use it in a way that will make them money. Like, it's inherently unenclosable, you know, so unless you try to design it so it is.
I can imagine, though, someone listening who is maybe on the left, and they're all, like, what they see is, like, speculation on crypto markets and, you know, huge jumps in price and drops in price, seemingly from, you know, tweets of a billionaire.
Yeah.
How do you mean by that?
What people see are just the most visible aspects of the use of this technology. And of course, the first blockchain was a cryptocurrency. And that's why it's the most developed, Bitcoin. But two, of course, it was immediately embraced by capitalists and the capitalist system because you can make money speculating on it, investing in it. Bitcoin itself, though, is also being used by people who want to send remittances to their relatives and not pay huge fees. It's also being used by people in countries where they don't have access to banking services. You know, you don't see a lot of the progressive uses of this technology. You see the speculation. Additionally, it's because it's a new, very new market, the rises and falls in price are just a reflection of the friction of desire and demand. So because it's not like a friction-free exchange market, that's why it goes way up and then goes way down. It's like a rubber band. You know, you pull it and it just snaps back. Bitcoin will increase in value and price because it's scarce and it's useful. I think also that because Bitcoin threatens state sovereignty and Wall Street sovereignty, states have used their vehicles of communication, like the New York Times, to put out essentially propaganda to try to convince the general public that using cryptocurrencies is not for them. It's scary. It's only for billionaires or people who want to buy drugs or guns. So stay away from it, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, they don't want any sort of currency that they don't control. I'm sure you'll start hearing that about other technologies that are built on systems where they can't control it.
Well, I guess how I would relate this to the race is that there is like, there seems to be a race where I think the state doesn't really know what to do with it, and it sort of challenges it to a certain extent, and this is why you see like this this big interest in CBDCs or central bank digital currencies on one side, and then as well I think you know capital is also a little bit, I mean some portions of capital have completely embraced it and have of course you know venture capital firms or investment firms that are almost exclusively specialized in cryptocurrency or blockchain related startups. And you're also seeing, you know, some, like there's a lot of banks have different ways that they're approaching it. Some of them are, you know, we'll give exposure to Bitcoin for our wealthy clients. Other ones are saying like, no, we won't touch it at all. So like, I guess the race, I guess some of them are competing in this race of what to do with it, which is basically like, how do we co-opt it best to mm-hmm. beat the other people who are racing, trying to build something different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of money to be made by banks and investors, and they just haven't all realized it yet. So the entire economy will move to tokens. That's my prediction. And so the first people to take advantage of that will make money. And as soon as one bank sees another bank making some money, offering the ability to say, immediately move your dollars into tokens, it's super easy, then they'll all start doing it.
So you're saying that, I assume you're basing this off of like the amount of technologists and fancy people that you've spoken to
right.
in your research,
right.
gives you a strong impression that and that these are fairly powerful people who are going to do it. And
No, if all the multimillionaire billionaires I talk to say that this is happening, it's probably going to happen because they control vast amounts of the economy. So yeah, and they're totally 100% embracing it.
Yeah, which is scary.
Right.
Side, I guess.
Right. I mean, scary, but for me, not scary. And I don't buy into the hype like, oh, technology is going to solve everybody's problems. But I do like the fact that average people will probably, if we're successful, be better off using decentralized systems, and tokens are one, because you can create community currencies and mutual aid currencies and all kinds of currencies that will keep money in a community. You can make it so they're non-deflationary, right? Mm. So right now you use a dollar, you don't really benefit because it doesn't, you save it, but it doesn't increase in value. It's actually decreasing in value. You can't color the dollar, and so in the sense that you can't force it to stay like within your cooperative community, so it can just be sucked up by some multinational. There's no control over the amount of dollars, you know, so it's like, yeah, it's scary because we're not used to it, but really dollars do not benefit the average person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess what sort of you're getting at, what I think is like that these decentralized systems being inherently open source and like tools that are like digital tools that are available to, I mean, basically anyone with internet access. On one side, I think it's basically inevitable that capital is going to do whatever it can to make money off of it and is going to try to, you know, maximize that thing happening, making money. But at the same time, their tools will be like very transparent in a certain, like you will see how they're making money and what the tools that they're using. And so it makes it very easy to like copy and adjust a bit. For example, if you want to have a mutual aid currency, or like, you know, to make some sort of system that facilitates particular types of relationships that you see as more, more socialistic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the technology is also becoming democratized in that they're building systems where you don't need to know Python or some coding language to be able to make an application. So anybody who wants to make an application will be able to do so. Even the AI I've seen being developed for the spatial web, you can talk to it in English and tell it what you want to make, and it will just write the software for you. And so theoretically, children could make applications, you know what I mean? And so this process will, I think, unlock the great wealth of human creativity that is currently unable to be expressed right now because people don't have the tools to do it. And once that, you know, door opens, I don't think people be like, yeah, I want to be exploited. And yeah, I want to live in a system where I have no sovereignty and we're trashing the planet and I don't know my neighbor, you know? So maybe I'm just being too optimistic thinking that people will use all these amazing tools to like liberate themselves. But, you know, when I was at Occupy and other big gatherings, that's what happens. You know, people, once they realize that they have agency and they can make things happen and do things, and we're all kind of together shared in this shared space as one human community, it's beautiful. And so I'm optimistic about the future, in particular because the people in this room they're successful. Like, I'm seeing their projects and I can see, yeah, that's going to work and they're going to interconnect and it's going to be like so amazing what happens once people are finally able, like everybody's finally able to do, you know, what they're doing here.
Yeah. So there's this race between systems and you're like in a particular spot within this race, just due to your research and like the people that you're interacting with. So I'm curious if you can explain a bit, how do you go about this interaction? Because I imagine for some people it could be, I don't know, I've never spoken to a billionaire before. Like, I don't know what I would tell a billionaire if I wanted him to, like, think, like, you know, if I was on a, you know, if I had, like, Mark Zuckerberg's ear.
Right.
What would I do? Like, I guess on one side, people would say, like, oh, why are you talking to Mark Zuckerberg? He's a, you know, he's a billionaire and not doing very much good in the world. But if I have that relationship, then what is the use of me burning the bridge, I guess?
Right, right.
But I guess how do you see that position and how you interact?
Sure. Well, you know, I always try to meet people where they're at and appreciate the spirit of what they're trying to do. And so these capitalists are not like evil, like Mr. Burns evil, you know what I mean? They're usually trying, you know, they have kids and a family and they're trying to, they think usually to do something good for the world, right? The Silicon Valley crowd is super positive and optimistic, you know, so it's not like it's hard to talk with them. And so, you know, talking with them about issues of democracy, about power, about making technologies available to people, often they're like, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. You know, like, saying, hey, let's give everybody on planet Earth a wallet just by default, right? You make that suggestion, they're like, oh, I never thought of that. That's a good idea. We're going to do it. And then everybody on Earth has a wallet, you know? So it's, for me, it's meaningful because these are people who have a lot of power. You know, the way they design systems really makes the difference. So yeah, like I'm going to be speaking at the Bitcoin conference and all the people here are like, why would you ever go to that? Right. Because it's so
very brave,
you know, Bitcoin bros. And I'm usually one of the very few women there who's not like a girlfriend or a wife of somebody. And yeah, you know, I just go up and I give my talk about how we need to build systems to increase democracy and help people and, you know, like protect the environment. And usually after my talks, people come up to me, you know, like 30 people and say, that was great. I never thought about that. Yeah, let's do that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like if you don't engage with them, you can't blame them for not knowing what you're doing. They're not going to find you. You got to go talk to them. So
Yeah. I think that's a... Yeah, something maybe to learn from, like how there's no reason having a political movement that's just like, you know, your friends or like people that already think like you and, you know,
right.
Not gonna go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, what we're saying is we are all part of a commons, planet Earth. We all are human beings, you know, so we have to act that way and reach out to people. And they're not... usually they're not bad people. I mean, there are some bad people, right? But usually they're not. They just literally have never been exposed to this information about that there is a possibility that we could use the technology for this instead of just making money off Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. So I want to ask you this question because I'm asking this to everyone else, but what does the crypto commons mean to you?
Okay. The crypto commons for me is about distributing all the wealth of the planet to everybody in the planet using technology. And I think that's achievable. I think we have to do it. So, you know, using the word crypto might be a little, like doesn't really capture what we're trying to do because we're not really about cryptocurrencies or the tokens or anything like that. It's really about building up the commons, switching from an extractive system to a generative system, switching from, you know, fear to hope, you know, from inequality to equality. It's all about just unlocking the great potential of humanity to, you know, to be our best, to do what we are really born to do, which is like be happy and love each other and work, but work in a meaningful way. So that's what it means to me.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for taking this time and for coming on for a second time.
I know, I'm flattered. I'm number, wow, first one, huh? Okay.
But
anytime.
Is there any, do you have any plugs? Is there any place where people can keep up with you and your work that you'd like to share?
I usually post my articles available for free on my website, which is, you know, sarahmansky.com. And I guess it should be sarahmansky.io now, right? Because everybody's IO. And, you know, I will be speaking at conferences. So if you hear this before November, then I will be in Miami. And then if you're in... There's a conference happening in Malta, also in November. Mm. So, yeah, I encourage people who are interested to attend these conferences because they are for you, right? So you might be like, oh, I don't own any Bitcoin. I can't go. You should go because you will find out, you'll learn a lot. And if you're like a lefty, go and talk to people, you know, and tell them about this great work that we're doing because they have money to help fund it too.
Nice.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks.
Of course.